home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Rated G Radio. We've got a fun show today. It's the Wednesday show, the day before Thanksgiving, and I'm always excited to do this particular show. As we start going into the holidays, it's a great time to remember, you know, what we're thankful for, why we're thankful for it. And, you know, if you're on Facebook and you're doing the, you know, 30 days of gratitude, I always think that's fun as well. Today, I am grateful to author Robin Raven, who was a guest recently on the show. And we talked about her new book, Santa's First Vegan Christmas. It's available on Amazon right now. And one of the things that I always love about doing the show, number one, I have great guests. So that's if they weren't great guests, they wouldn't be on the show, because otherwise it's like, you know, watching paint dry. It's just so exciting. So the people that I have on, I really love having as guests, and hopefully they enjoy their time on the show as well. That's first and foremost. But then, you know, you're listening to the show, and I always hope that you enjoy it as well. But for me, it's like, you know, meeting new friends and hanging out for an hour and getting to know different people from all around the world all the time. And one of the benefits of doing this program is that if the guest has had a, you know, halfway decent time, and, you know, maybe they know, you know, some people, and they refer people to me all the time to be on the show. And as usual, that's what happened with our guest today, Mark Reynolds. I'll talk about Mark in just a second, and we're going to bring him on, and we're going to be at chatterboxes for the next hour. But I think Robin's been on the show a couple of times now, and she was referred to me by another listener, I think Tony G out of Hackensack. I may be wrong on my frame of reference here, because, you know, I've got the memory of a dog. You show me something shiny and I'm off in a different direction. But I think Tony referred Robin over to me. Robin's been on the show twice, and then here we are today. So the 6 degrees of separation from Kevin Bacon, really about a degree, and we've got Mark Reynolds as the guest today. So we're going to be having Mark on. I want to remind everybody, tomorrow on the Thanksgiving show for Rated LGBT Radio, I'm going to telegraph you a little secret here, folks. I get to work tomorrow, so I'm super happy about that, because, you know, Papa needs a new pair of shoes. So we're not doing a live show. However, Rob and I did a pre-record. Now, we're not telling you this, you know, tomorrow while the show is being broadcast. You're going to think that, oh my God, it's just a live show, which is great. Think that all you want. But the show is going to start airing at 4 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Why 4 a.m.? I don't know. It just felt like a fun time to put it on the calendar and let it start going. So if you want to listen to the Thursday show of Rated LGBT Radio tomorrow, it starts at 4 a.m. It is not a typo. You really can just press play and it will play. Now, one of the interesting secrets of the show tomorrow is that I was having apparently some internet issues or computer issues, some kind of issues, I don't know, about 15 minutes into the show. And my microphone, which ties into the, you know, studio and does all that fun stuff, decided it wanted to have a spaz attack. So I had to reset the computer, and I had to leave Rob just like chattering all by himself for about 5 minutes while the computer reset and did all of that fun stuff. So I have no idea what he said. So you will be encouraged to tune in for that and so much more. We talked about politics without really talking politics. We talked about social media and all of the fake news articles that are out there today, and how to kind of spot some of those fake news articles. One of my pet peeves in seeing all the things on social media, A, everybody thinks they're a reporter. I am not. I don't claim to be. But then, you know, everybody goes and posts all these dumb articles from fake websites with slivers of elements of grains of salt of truth to them, and post them and start commenting on them like they're absolute fact. And, you know, in my opinion, you look like a fool. So we talk about some of the ways you can help identify articles like that before you share them and make yourself look silly. So all kinds of helpful stuff. And we wrap up tomorrow's program with a little bit of a song as well. So today, Mark Reynolds joins the show. He's got this, I say, hot new book. It's a big new book called Chasing the Northern Lights. He is, you know, an engaging author. We're going to talk to him and about all of his writing journeys as his first time guest to the show. Now, Mark doesn't know this, but I have like my, I don't say real 20 questions, but I mean, I have since we haven't talked to Mark before, I want to know all the stuff about him. So you're going to get kind of like behind the scenes with Mark Reynolds today as we talk about him, his journey as a writer, and his new book. So, Mark, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Hello, Garrett. It is great to be here. I'm thrilled, beyond thrilled to be here. Thank you so much. Yay.
You bet. So what part of the country are you calling from?
I am calling from just west of Philadelphia.
And oh, my God. Did you guys
absolutely
have snow?
We had no snow. My family is from upstate New York. I spoke to my mom a couple of days ago. She had, I guess they got like 15 inches of snow down there, but we have not seen flake one in this area. It seems pretty – go ahead.
No, do you see like a four seasons, you know, a full four seasons where you're at then?
You can, yeah. It's been an absolutely gorgeous fall around here. You know, I mean, the leaves peaked when they were supposed to, and you walk outside, it's that nice big sweater type of weather. It's crisp and everything. Although I think Sunday it started getting really, really chilly, which is good. But it was strange. Saturday was like into the 60s and 70s, and then this cold front came through and big winds and everything. Many of the leaves that were on the trees are now on the ground or cleaned up. But you do get the four seasons around here. It's really gorgeous.
You know, I love the concept of four seasons, Mark. I grew up in Oregon, and so we had four seasons, but all four seasons were tempered with one common theme, and it was like cloudy weather all the time. But, you know, you did have the change of the seasons, the leaves falling off the trees. And, you know, at least where I grew up, you know, it had snow maybe once every 3 or 4 years, something like that. But then it was like fun because you had it for, you know, a few days or maybe a week and then it was gone. But summers were great. Falls were great. You know, spring was great. All
I,
of that
I think
fun
that's
stuff.
The thing about living in this area, too, is it's milder. It's more temperate. You know, I mean, we don't get the extremes, you know, as long as I've been living in this area, we don't get the extremes. That a lot of the other people are seeing, you know, like obviously around the lakes or around the mountains or something like that. There isn't a lot of snow. I think total we had 25 inches of snow last year, and 21 of that came in one storm on the weekend. So I guess it's really, really depends on how the winds carry across the state.
Yeah. Well, go big or go home for those 21 inches, you know, so there you go.
Yeah.
So for Thanksgiving, since Thanksgiving is tomorrow, and everybody, we are going to talk incessantly about Mark's book, The Chasing the Northern Lights, available on Amazon. By the way, if you're listening to the show today, on the show page, I have a link that takes you directly to Mark's Amazon author page or Amazon page, and you can buy Chasing the Northern Lights today, even while the show is going. So you don't even have to leave your browser. You can just, you know, click that. It'll take you to a new window. I'll repeat this again because it bears repeating. When we have guests on the show, these are indie people. These are not people who are sponsored by like major publishing houses or record labels or movie studios. These are independent artists who come on and share their craft. And so I'm a big fan of saying, buy 10. It's the season of giving. So buy one for yourself. You say, how am I going to buy 10? You buy one for yourself, and then you can gift 9 others to your family and friends. And they will go like, wow, they must, you know, really like me. They sent me Mark's book for Thanksgiving. This is really cool. So buy 10 copies and go support the cause. But, as we start looking at, you know, things that are happening in this world, Mark, we've got Thanksgiving coming up. What's a tradition that you really enjoy for this time of year?
I think a lot, two words, apple pie.
Oh my gosh.
Now
do you make one yourself or does somebody have a favorite recipe that you just like, are like, oh my gosh.
No, I used to do that. For many, many, many years, I would make, at this time of the year, my aunt would make, apple pies straight from scratch with, everything. The crust was homemade, everything. You throw it all in there. It's all good stuff. And I've since tried to carry that on. Now, I wasn't able to do that this year, and I thought about it, but there really is nothing for me. Like, at my home, 5 minutes from behind my house where my home is, there is a apple orchard that's there. So many times. Oh, yeah, it was great. So many times. And they would have different kinds of everything. They would have all kinds of different apples that would make just the best pies in the world. And we would have this, I would take this one apple, which was called a Portland, and it wasn't you know, super sweet. It was tart. It made just, it cooked great, and it was great. So, like I said, I wasn't able to do that this year because of, you know, some other things that were going on, but that is one, absolutely one thing I love to do at this time of the year. It's just so much fun. But over and above that, too, there's a really good curiosity factor that you see on people's faces when they try it.
Uh-huh.
Like they're like, oh my gosh, this is good, or what did you use in this, or how did you make the crust? And I'm like, I just made it myself. You know, there's such a special thing about being able to provide that for somebody who's never really had it before. So,
well,
so
homemade pie.
I mean, myself on. I'm not like a cook or a super baker or anything like that, but that is one thing I absolutely love to do.
Okay, so next year, everybody, you heard Mark say he's taking pie orders for 2017 right here. I think that's exactly what he said. So, you know, get your orders in starting January 1st, so he's got time to prepare. But, you know,
that's good, word for word, absolutely.
One of the, you know, I love apple pie, and I'll tell you, I'm not, I mean, if you look at me now, you wouldn't recognize me as a kid, because as a kid, I was like so stick thin, I could eat, you know, 17,000 calories a day, and I still weighed like about a dime. But one of the things that I always loved about Thanksgiving is my mom would make apple pie. She would occasionally do like a cherry or something else, maybe a pumpkin pie, which I hated at the time now and just like, oh my God, shove it in my face. But she made pies with the pie crust. And one of the things that I didn't realize until like many years later is that, pies usually don't have like, you know, a 42-inch crust on the pie. You know, it's just like a nice little tiny little bit. But she always made extra pie crust. And she always knew when I was around because, you know, she'd finish the pie and I had this giant, you know, rim around the pie. And I would come by and like, oh, she won't notice if I take a nibble. She won't. And then pretty soon, like, all the pie crust is gone. And she's kind of like, I can't even take this kid anyplace. You know, he eats all the pie. So the pie looked terrible because, you know, I ate all the pie crust. But it was just like the best thing ever. But
my grandmother was like that too. I mean, many, many times when we do Thanksgiving over at my grandmother's house, I'd walk in and there, I mean, from the minute you walk in the door, there's this constant battle in the room turkey to raspberry pie. And it just went back and forth. So, I mean, you can't, you know, you can't get 2 feet within the door without starting to just drool and salivate. I miss that so much.
I've never heard of a raspberry pie, like ever.
Oh yeah, yeah. She had bushes out in back of her home, and she would make. She really didn't do like a lot of jams and things like that, not that I recall. But she was absolutely famous for raspberry pie. She'd have a real thin crust that was on top of it. So you know, a lot of those, you know, ideas I have for writing as well too. It's just those. It's not for me. It's not the big things. You know, it's the little things, the little personal things that. Can make for good writing, you know, because then you have to try and make it so that everybody else can relate to it or correspond with it in some way. But yeah,
what a great segue,
now
Mark.
My mouth is really drooling. Oh yeah, oh yeah. it's a great memory.
Let's get to. By the way, if anybody in my family would have cooked a raspberry pie, I guarantee I would have eaten the entire thing. We had raspberry bushes all over the place, so this is the first time I've ever heard of a raspberry pie. So I've got to go look that up. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
So let's get to you. So we've talked a little bit about, you know, pies and growing up and things like that. But who are you as from an author standpoint? Tell the listeners a little bit about, you know, your journey to, you know, how you became who you are today.
I think it's kind of a best of both worlds for me insofar as I was born and raised in a small town in upstate New York, Maine, New York. I went to a high school there called Maine Edwell High School, and I have to actually give a shout out to the current Little League World Series champions who are from Edwell, New York. I had to say that.
There you go.
And so I have a lot of experiences, you know, within a small town and that type of thing. Met my wife, moved just west of the Philadelphia area. And so now I have all of this big city exposure. And so, like I said, you kind of get the best of both worlds. Remember all the good things that you did when you were a kid, you know, whether it was in school or whether you were playing somewhere or riding your bike somewhere. And then you get to the, you know, you move and you get to the city and there's so much that's there. as well. If you go and do the, in the city of Philadelphia, it's first of all, it's a great city if you're a writer or if you have some sort of creative bent, if you're an artist or something like that. Go do an all, you know, go do all the tourist things, but then take 5 minutes and stand on a street corner somewhere. And immediately your sixth senses start firing because everything is, you've got, you're listening to conversations, you're smelling the city, you're looking up, you're seeing the buildings, you know, you're feeling the breezes and stuff that go by you. You sense the spirit of the people that moved about in the city 200 years ago versus the people that are moving about in the city now. And it's quite amazing. So in that sense, I've been very lucky to have that type of influence.
And so when did you decide that, you know, hey, I'm going to write, you know, this fantastic novel? Were you always a writer?
I started writing when it went back to grade school. And I'll tell you a story here. It's great. When I was younger, I wasn't really much of an athlete, didn't really have much of a build, you know, as far as being able to participate in sports and things like I wanted to. So, you know, immediately I picked up books and things like that and started writing. And I actually had two very good influences prior to that. One was in back of my house when I was growing up was a drive-in theater. So on the weekends, I would pass that ran from my house all the way to the back of the theater.
It ran through the woods,
and just the local neighborhood kids knew about it. And so many weekends I was able to get exposed to lots of different writing as far as movies and things like that. I think in my youth there wasn't any Friday or Saturday night when I wasn't there watching something like that. That's number one. Number two is my mom was such a hard worker when she was working. She worked at a magazine and book distributor. And so I was very fortunate in being able to receive like basically free magazines and free books and things like that. I had my choice of anything that I wanted to get. So that involved a lot of reading stuff as well. Then there was basically that. I think the time that I wanted to be a writer, I mean, I think the first time that I knew I wanted to be a writer, I had such a great teacher as a reading teacher in fourth grade. I'm 49 years old now, I was nine back then. And she put it, because I wasn't so good with sports and things like that, it was very easy to take to the next thing, which moved me, which was reading and writing. So moving forward into a science class that I had later, I remember this day specifically. Moving forward into a science class that I had, an assignment that we had was come up with a one-page story about how the Great Bear got into the sky. You know, make up a story about how the constellation was there. So all of us in the class, we had to write that out, and I was scared to death. I had to read it once to the class.
Oh, my God.
And the teacher was so impressed, I believe, with that. She said, she sat there in the corner just kind of shaking her head with a big smile on her face. She asked me to read it again because she wanted to make sure that everybody in the class heard it. And then once that took off, once it was done, I got a standing ovation. And I couldn't believe it. So I went back to my reading teacher and I said, thank you very much for this. And from that day on, I think I've been writing. And just recently, I made a promise to my teacher that day. I said, the very first book that I'm able to write, you will have a copy of and you will be able to read. And I was able to make good on that promise a couple of months ago, 40 years later. And it was one of the most important, one of the most moving moments of my life.
Mark, you just gave me chills.
To get that response back from her was just something that, you know, it's one of those, obviously one of those bucket list moments, and I was able and so happy to be able to keep that promise to her. And and so from that day on, I've tried different things. You know, I've tried kinds of different things, all kinds. The first story I wrote, I think, was about 15 years old, and it was a murder mystery that took place within a hotel, and it was called the Rossington House Murders. And if anybody out there has a copy of it that's listening to this, let me know. I'd love to be able to read that again. And what I ended up doing was my mom had some – I put all that together, and I didn't know anything about the writing industry at that point. I had zero knowledge about it. So as a 15-year-old kid, all you want to do is get your story out. So I wrote it down on notebook paper, on line paper. I wrote it in ink and pen, some in pencil. I scratched some stuff out so it wasn't anywhere, you know, near – to what a submission that you could send to somebody. But I sent it anyway. And because I wanted to get some feedback as to how this was going for me, how this journey was going for me. And I got a rejection letter back from somebody at Tor Books. And I believe his name was Michael Post. And I would love to be able to reconnect with him at some point. I sent them a letter, a picture of the letter. I've kept it to this day. I'm going to frame it. I keep it in a firebox because it's, you know, it's obviously something that's very important to me. I don't want to lose it. There's so much value in that as far as nostalgia and whatnot for me. But that's really where it started.
Wow. Did you ever think?
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it just kind of kept going from there. You know, I mean, not every day is a writing day. You know, you write when the spirit moves you, obviously, but when it moves you, it really moves you.
Yeah, well, no kid. So did you ever think, you know, growing up, boy, I'm going to be a writer before you read that letter in science class? Or did you want to be a fireman or a doctor or, you know, like all the things?
I wanted to be an astronaut.
Of course.
I always wanted to be an astronaut. Yeah.
Okay.
Because I couldn't. That kind of disappointed me because I wear glasses, and obviously to be an astronaut, you had to – you know, one of the prime things is that you got to have a real super heavy duty science background, which I don't have. And I wear glasses as well. So, you know, you got to have, as I understand it, you have to have vision that's 20/20, that's not correctable, you know, with glasses or anything like that. So that was never really a thing. So I always used to watch like all kinds of, I used to watch like the old Apollo missions, if there was ever one, or that type of stuff. I used to watch those videos and things all the time. I was so intrigued by that. One of the very first books that I ever read was called You Will Go to the Moon. And it's, I think I pulled that out in second grade. And I used to read that thing. I used to read that thing over and over and over again. And then I went from that to Encyclopedia Brown stories as a youngster. But that was one of the first, because I had such a love for space and adventuring out there and, you know, that type of thing, it really fires your inspiration as well.
I love that. What a great story. I mean, it's so funny. You know, people have no concept sometimes about how the most random thing in the world will end up changing your life, hopefully for the better. And that sounds, you know, exactly like what could have happened. You know, you could have been any other thing, and here you are, this great writer, because you had somebody in, you know, your science class say, you got to, you know, write this story about this. And then,
it's,
you know,
because
your
one
whole
person believed in you. It's because one person believes in you. If there is one person who wholeheartedly believes in you as a person, believes in your ideas, believes in your creativity, and not just what you do for yourself, but what you do for your others, it's a huge blow up to, it does nothing but encourage you on. And I love that.
And I think that, you know, the world needs more of, we could spend another whole show on that. So I'm not going to do that, but I think the world needs more of that, because, you know, I'll tell you, I've reconnected with different teachers and different people in my life on Facebook. You know, social media can be a nice thing sometimes. And it is, it's so much fun to be able to go back. And I have one teacher that's on Facebook right now. His name is Trey Anderson. He was my architecture teacher for 3 years in high school. And it's very hard because I met him probably like 3 or 4 years ago at a big thing here at the Rose Bowl when University of Oregon was going to actually, you know, play decently for a season. And I got to meet him again. And my friend Teresa, who had invited me, said, here's Trey. And I'm like, Trey who? Because I just remember him as Mr. Anderson. So, you know, here I am 40 years out of high school going, Mr. Anderson. It's so good. He's like, you cannot call me that anymore. My name's Trey. It's like, right. Okay, Mr. Anderson. you know, but you never know who these people are.
That's what I was going to do. I mean, I got, you know, don't call me by my first name anymore, you're, or by my last name, call me by my first name. I'm like, no. In the back of my head, you're always going to be Mrs. X. You know, that's the thing. So, I mean, that's exactly how I'm going to correspond with her from, you know, for the rest of my life.
There you go.
I totally agree with you on that. I totally understand that.
So have you always made a profession out of writing, or has it been one of these things where you had to have a little bit of a side job or a real, you know, day job to, you know, kind of funnel the dream as you're going along, or have you made a career of this?
Yeah, it's always been like that. I've always had day jobs. My first working jobs, actually my first job was in the drive-in that I spoke about.
Love that. Oh my gosh.
Well, eventually it's like, you know, you get moving in so much, you figure, well, let me do something on the honest and the up and up and movies I was able to watch and speak in. So I actually ended up working there for a few years, loved it. That was my first job. But most of my actual working career after high school has been day jobs, like, you know, probably for the first 15, 16, actually 20 years I worked in hotels. And then I started getting into the accounting aspect of hotels from that point. And then from there, once I moved on from the hotels to other things, it's really just been accounting based. So to answer your question, it's just been really day jobs. Writing has always been, you know, something that you have to, for me, really, you have to do it once a day. I mean, you have to be able to get that out and do it once a day. You have to make time for it. You know, don't go to your grave and not sing your song. Sing your song. Say whatever it is you need to say.
Let's talk about this.
Always try and make time for that.
Yeah, it's this because as a lot, you know, I have a lot of writers on the show, and very few of them, meaning nobody, makes a living out of being a writer anymore because it's just, you know.
No.
It's not possible. So after you sell your first 12 books, well, we'll talk about the business of writing too, but after you sell your first 12 books to your mother and Aunt Martha and your friend down the street, you know, you've got a whole world that you got to go sell to. So as a writer,
and also, yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Mark.
I was going to say, I don't think anybody that writes gets into it that way initially, you know,
right.
Everybody writes because they want to write. Everybody writes because they want to get the story out and do things like that. You understand going into it, it's not going to be a huge moneymaker. And really, you write for yourself, but you also try and get, you know, other people involved. If there's one person that you can move with your story or something like that, then you've done your job and you can move on to the next.
Well, and I agree. It's just one of these things that, you know, if this world were, I don't know, 30 years ago and we can't turn back the clock, you know, you always think about the big money contracts the publishing houses were paying out. But, you know, then we had four writers to pick from. And now we've got millions of people who, you know, write fantastic books that never would see the light of day just because that's just not how the industry was, quote unquote, back then. But now that we have, you know, things like Amazon and ebooks and Kindles and Nooks and all of these other ways to get your books out there, it's really opened up the floodgates for a lot of folks, and the work that they have is quite spectacular. And you know that, you know darn well that if they're in a traditional old world, you know, mindset of the 1970s or 80s, their work would never see the light of day.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, with the advent of electronics and stuff, somebody asked me that once. They said, "Well, which as a writer, what do you prefer? I mean, would you rather sit and read a book?" Or a physical book, or how do you feel about Kindle books and stuff like that? And I'm of two minds of that. You know, the first mind of that, as a reader, the first mind of that is I love to have the feel of a book. And that's why, it, you know, you love to open the book, you love to read the pages and stuff like that. You love to see that type of thing, you know, and you love to be able to, with the words that are there, you love to be able to visualize. As a reader who reads Kindle books, I actually find myself reading a little bit quicker. You know, I find myself absorbing things differently. So, you know, as a reader these days, I read on the Kindle, but I absolutely miss the books, and I will pick them up, you know. And as a writer, a lot of people are like, as a writer, it doesn't matter because the job doesn't change. You know,
right.
You always – you I mean, whether people read it as a book or they read it as an ebook, you're still going to have to do your job as a writer. You know, mm-hmm. Charles Dickens and Mark Twain back then were not thinking about an audience and reaching a larger audience because everybody had a Kindle or something like that. They did their job because they wanted to make sure that they were continuing what they needed to do as writers. And I guess that's kind of where I am on it, you know.
I'm on board. I will tell you that I have a lot of authors that want to send me their books, and the space that I live in, God bless America, is very, very tiny these days. And so it's like, please, if you have any love for me at all, do not send me a book. I don't have an inch of space that I can do it. And it's not because I don't want it, but I just don't have the space for it. So, you know, just like with your book, right. I said, please send it to me on PDF or, you know, send it to me on ebook or whatever. And
right.
You know, 99% of the authors that I have on, I'm reading online, and I am getting used to it. I will tell you, I do miss holding the book in your hand and having to have the right light, you know, so you know, sometimes I can't read in bed because, you know, the lighting just isn't right and it's too dark and I'm going to squint, but you know, you hold that book and then you turn, you know, you smell the book, you are able to turn the page, you can go back. There's just something about being able to touch, hold, and feel that book that it just is amazing. But when I sit and read, I still read for enjoyment, but I'll be reading, you know, on the computer here. But it's a completely different experience for the reader to, you know, go through. So I'm not a curl up and read it on the ebook in on my iPad once I get into bed. I'm sitting at my computer and like paying attention. I don't know.
Same thing with stores and stuff, too. And I actually got this unbelievably great piece of news a little earlier. It's so sad to see a lot of these stores that rely on, you know, the written word in books and stuff that are, because of the advent of electronics and stuff, a lot of these stores are starting to close down. Not the larger ones like Barnes & Noble, obviously, but the mom-and-pop stores.
But the mom-and-pop.
And there was this, one store who was maybe about 5 or 10 minutes from my home and discovered where it was. And it was this unbelievably grand old girl. And she hosted so many famous writers, so many famous, you know, so many different things. There were signings there all the time. Great shows. They had this unbelievably huge wall of nothing but magazines, everything that you wanted to do. And it gave you the experience of being able to go into a store and actually not selecting the book, but having the book select you. And of course they ran across some financial things and the store closed down. But just this very day, I got some information from somebody that they have reopened. So after this interview,
oh my God.
I am going,
I know where you're
to,
going.
I'm going to head over there and find out if that is the case. And if that is the case, because the owner that was there, she had the place for 30 or 35 years, something like that. She was so gracious about the fact that people came in and visited her when we did, and that she had to close the store and move on to other things. But now it sounds like they've changed their plans, and I want to confirm that firsthand.
Well, you know, if that is true, Mark, you really should post that on social media and say, everybody, you know, run on down and, you know, hang out.
You betcha
it is.
I will. You
it's,
betcha I
it's
will.
It's so rare. Because out here in California, I think it's Amazon. They have opened up a couple of, you know, mom and pop brick and mortar stores. That sounds silly to say about Amazon, but they've done that down like San Diego, you know, Southern California, places like that. So it gives the, you know, readers those opportunities, you know, not big stores like the Barnes and Noble, you know, that we have. But I thought that was really interesting that they're taking that. We need to have a brick and mortar feet on the street presence and, you know, let people actually, you know, come in and experience this again. I thought, what an interesting shift in their business model to go to something like that. The next thing you know, they're going to be opening up a Costco.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that blows up. I would love to be able to. I'd love to be able to see in my newsfeed that they did that, you know, in any other major cities, and it's starting to grow. That's a great piece of information.
Yeah. Well, let's get back, Mark. Here's the problem with you. I could talk to you for about like 15 hours in a row, so and we're never going to get. So I need to get refocused here, and we're going to be talking about your book, Chasing the Northern Lights. Let's talk about your process as a writer. You've talked about the fact that you have to write every day. So describe a typical writing experience for you. What does your day look like to make this happen?
Well, I have the good fortune for myself, probably not for my wife, But she gets up at 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning to go to work every single day. So many days I'll stay up and try to write in those hours. A lot of my earlier writing was done during the day, you know, and then I thought, well, let me try a different approach. Let me see what works different. You know, what's maybe something else will come to me. So I started writing at like 3 o'clock in the morning. I started doing all my planning and things like that. For Chasing the Northern Light, I really didn't want to make it a procedural. You know, I knew that there was a lot of those types of books and stuff out there. I didn't really want to waste, for me, I didn't really want to waste a lot of time just kind of going, I mean, the story involves virus, but I didn't want to go over all the different aspects of what a virus can do and how the doctors treat it and all that kind of stuff. To me, there was a bigger sense of story that was occurring, and that's really how I wanted to get it out. So while I did some research and stuff like that, much of the writing of that came about with that in mind, you know. So if I start a new project, you know, you think about, first of all, you think of the story, and then you think of the characters, but then you think of what are the little things that make up the characters that have influenced them during the course of the story. Is there, did something bad or good happen to them in the past? Did, you know, do they have a limp? You know, do they wear a jacket? You know, when you think of the Fonz on Happy Days, what's the first thing you think of?
Hey, he's wearing a leather jacket.
Hey, right. Yeah. There are signature iconic things about these characters that make them stick out in the minds of people that you're trying to reach. And so bearing that in mind and then creating this world that you create, you know, that's kind of what I wanted to do. Make sure all your characters are set first. Make sure every single thing that you think will affect them within the story is covered. Financial situations, religion, whatever. You know, have they had a rough childhood? Have they had, were they born with a silver spoon in their mouth? You know, were they affected by sickness? You know, what's happened to the family around them? So to me, in order to make the story work and that the characters are believable, you have to create all these different things around them. So I'll usually set up a couple of different either charts or, you know, outlines and stuff like that. I have a paper that allows you to do all that and then just go from there. At that point, then I'll come up with an outline because then I'll have an idea of, you know, what A and what Z will be, but then you don't really know what the B, C, D, E, and E is and all the way through. So you sit and you think that out. So there are people that are called panthers, which are people that fly and do the story by the seat of the pants.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are people that that are called planners, which do the plan, you know, do the planning. And that's, I consider myself one of them.
You are, Mark, and really, I think that comes from your accounting background, or, you know, you have a very scientific approach to the writing, and it's very curious to me, and I get such a big, you know, grin on my face right now as you describe that, because, you know, your background in and for your day job, it lends itself beautifully for how you prepared to, you know, write for the characters here. So I do get a kick out of that. For your main character like Carter Boyd, who is the, you know, who's our hero here in the book, you know, when you say, you know, you write about who they are and that type of thing, what kind of a time frame, and then not that you have to have a time frame on it, but what kind of a time frame did you have with Carter from the beginning of the time you said, here's who I'm going to, you know, make my hero here, and okay, I'm done, I'm ready to, you know, sit down and put pen to paper, so to speak, for, you know, put, you know, taking Carter on this journey. What was that like for you?
I think maybe in a week, because there were a lot of things that were going on, you know, in the world at that time when I was writing the book that allowed me to take this particular person and shape them to something that I think everybody could relate to.
Mm-hmm.
At the time when I wrote, you know, there were the X Games that were going on. There was all this interest in extreme sports and everything. So immediately what came to mind to me when I was thinking of Carter was this person who, you know, he's not like a slacker,
mm-hmm.
but he's very responsible. He's very tortured. You'll see in some of those things he has some parental issues, as a lot of the characters do. But it came to me, that was the biggest thing when I started in mind, when the idea came to me initially, I'm thinking, well, who can I have as somebody that I can fit into this world. And at that time, there was a lot of attention to, you know, extreme sports and things like that. So I had this guy with loose jeans and you know, torn jeans and loose-fitting shirts, and he's got a hat cocked on sideways, and, you know, he's just always looking for the biggest thrill. You know, he's just always looking for, you know, what the next biggest step is going to be. He's done all kinds of, you know, he's a musician within the book, so he goes through all these extreme guitar solos, and he does a lot of, you know, dangerous hiking and things like that, and then the meat of the story comes in, and that's when he starts discovering himself.
Well, with that, we've been very vague, everybody, and for good reason, because one of the things that Mark's going to do today, he's going to give away an autographed copy of Chasing the Northern Lights. But guess what? You have to stay tuned and listen in, because in just a moment or two, Mark is going to give you a question. Okay. Now, here's why we're doing this, folks. We want to make sure everybody listening has the opportunity to participate and have the chance to win the autographed copy of the book. So we're going to talk a little bit more, but then Mark's going to give you the question, which you will have the opportunity to answer this coming Saturday on Facebook. How exciting is this? So if you missed the episode, you can go back and listen to the replay, fast forward, rewind, listen throughout the entire hour, and then you'll know the answer. But then you'll have a chance to answer that on Saturday, and one lucky listener today or one lucky reader on Facebook who replies with the correct answer is going to get a copy of the book in time for the holidays. How exciting is that? But before we get to the question, Mark, tell us about what, you know, kind of what the whole story is. Cause we start off with this main in chapter one with Esther, and she's in this assisted living place, and you think the story is going to go one way. And then all of a sudden chapter two comes in and we have something else, and chapter three comes in And so it's for me, it was like watching a great, I don't want to say soap opera, but a great episodic where, you know, you have different scenes and you're introduced to all of these key people differently. So yeah. Who are the people that we need to love and care about here in the book?
Well, you mentioned Esther. She is, as the book opens, she is in a mental health facility, and she's tortured. And she's tortured by her past and for things that she's participated in, for things that she knows, and for things that she knows are coming. And so she begins the book. She feels something very important, very cathartic about getting all this information out, and so that when the time comes when she will be called upon, which we find out later in the book, she will have prepared herself mentally, physically, in every other way possible for when this time comes down. So then she begins to, basically in a series of journal entries, she begins to relate the backstory. Then we meet Carter, who is the main character. We meet Dr. Rhodes, who is a very well-established, well-respected military viral specialist. And he is very important within his own town because he's created a place that has provided for jobs. People love him. But he is also working with Senator Lon Schreiber, who is his partner for the past 30 years in keeping an agenda based on an experience that they had together going. That agenda comes in direct conflict, Carter and his aspirations later in the book. The basic idea of the book is that Carter is looking for the most extreme thing in the world to try, because he's just, you know, he's down about some of the aspects of the town that he lives in. He wants to enjoy life to the fullest. He wants to go out and just give it all he's got. And so that comes to him in the form of catching a virus. Now, you think at some point catching a virus would be a silly thing to do. But with this particular virus, I've worked the story so that if you catch the virus, it can actually be a good thing. It may kill you, it may not kill you. But there are aspects of the virus that allow certain physical things to change within you, within your thinking, that lead you to a better place in life. It illuminates a path. That's what the virus is called. It's called the Northern Light, because you look to the north and you see your true identity and you see your true calling in life and things that you're supposed to do. And these two, the doctor and the senator, are working against that for reasons I won't get into.
Well, but you have all to read the book.
I didn't want it to be. It's the villains were the hardest people to write, I think, you know, in some ways, because you have to make whatever, either bad people, they're doing the wrong things, obviously, but you have to make them relatable. There has to be something in them that you understand as a human being that allows you to say you can get what it is that they're doing, even though you're totally against it and stuff like that. And obviously you root for the main character. So that's really where that comes from.
So at the end of the day, and we're not giving anything away here, folks, but at the end of the day, what do you want your readers to get out of the story?
To, you know, that the almost like a Wizard of Oz type of thing. I was thinking about that the other day. You know, I mean, you really don't need to look any further than your own backyard to find the things that are most important to you. You know, I mean, we follow Carter through a series of different changes. We follow him through unknown dangers. He's got people that are pursuing him based on the events of the story. And really, when it comes down to the climax of the story, you know, you just, everything that you want to do, pursue everything in the world that you want to do, but understand that you really, you don't need to look any further than your family. You don't need to look any further than your heart or your backyard to understand that that's where the best things in the world are. And that's it.
I love, you know, and it's funny that you say that, because, you know, at the beginning of our conversation, you were talking about growing up with a movie theater in the backyard and how exciting that was for you. And, you know, growing up, all the excitement in the world happened in your backyard.
Yep.
So how that,
absolutely,
you know, you transition that into your writing is very cool. Okay, Mark, it is now time. So listeners, get your pen and paper ready. So we're telegraphing this to you. So get ready. Mark, what is the secret question that you are going to pose on Facebook Saturday about your time here on the show, or the question that you're going to ask the listeners to answer for a chance to win an autographed copy of Chasing the Northern Lights?
The question is, when I was in my elementary school days, I had to write a story about a constellation that was how that constellation got in the sky. What was the name of the constellation that I had to write about, which inspired me on my writing career?
That is a great question. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. I've got to go back and re-listen now. Okay. So everybody, one more time, Mark, what's the question one more time? So just in case they missed it.
What is the name of the constellation that I had to write a story about, how it was created in the sky, which inspired me on my writing career?
Okay, there you go, folks. You've heard the question two times. Now, I'm going to tell you, here's the other secret. You can go back and listen to the replay of the show in about 20 minutes after the show is over. You can fast forward. You can rewind 1,000 times. It's all okay. And write down your answer. Now, Mark, when you pose this contest, where on Facebook will listeners find the opportunity to answer?
I'm going to put it on my personal page, and also I'm going to put it on my author page, which is called Mark My Words to the Mark Reynolds author page. You can search for it. It's very easy to find. Once you like that page, it'll be there. I'm going to allow everybody to listen to the show in its entirety to be able to get the question. I'm going to put the question on Saturday and then select a winner sometime Saturday evening and then announce Sunday. And I am so happy to be able to do that for someone.
Yeah, I mean, what a great gift. The gift of reading is great, but what's even a better gift? The gift of great books that are actually interesting to read. And I am loving my journey through Chasing the Northern Lights. I will tell you, one of the things that I thought was very interesting as a reader of your book, since I've not read anything you've done before, and this is our first time chatting today, how easily I pictured Chris or I, how easily I pictured Carter's just appearance and his personality and all of this in the first chapter that he's introduced. Because I could like totally see everything that he was doing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I know this person. So the characters that you write about are very relatable and in an easy, it's not like, at least for me, even the bad guys, you know, you're sitting here going, I've got a picture of you know, this person, and it's because he has a silver ponytail, or it's because of this. And it's like, oh, yep. I know the actor who should play him when this becomes a movie. And this is, you know, so it was, this is a book that I am easily able to dive in quickly. And that's key for me, because if I have to like kind of get interested in it, I'm just going to be like, I just can't do this. But I dove in last night. I'm about third of the way through the book right now, and I'm enjoying all of the crazy things that are going on. So if you would like to get a copy of Chasing the Northern Lights, we do have a link to Mark's Amazon page where you can go and buy it as an ebook today, or just, you know, go. We always say support the cause. Chasing the Northern Lights, available on Amazon today. Click the link, go buy 10 copies, one for yourself, gift 9 to other people. It's very, very important that you do this, because it will help support Mark's writing career. And we want everybody to know, you know, it's important to do. So
it's also available, Garrett, I should mention, as a printed copy on thebookpatch.com as well. So once if you purchase it as an ebook, great. If you wanted to purchase a printed or a paperback copy, it's available on thebookpatch.com as well. You click on the main menu, you know, in the search field, you type in Chasing the Northern Light. It brings up the description, and then you can purchase it as you would purchase anything on Amazon. It's very, very simple.
Okay, let's get down to brass tacks. Where do you make the most money as a writer? Do you make it on a printed copy or on the ebooks?
I would have to say at this point, probably the ebooks, you know, just because of the fact that they're priced cheaper, they move a little bit quicker, and they sell more.
Okay. Because I personally,
that's how it would be for me. The paper ones will, you know, go as they go. But I think everybody that is an independent writer enjoys, you know, more sales successes.
So I asked because I have some artists who say, don't buy it off of iTunes or don't buy it here, buy it directly from me. Because I got a garage full of the books that I'm waiting to send out. Or CDs or whatever the case is. So I always want to find out from the guest, you know, where they prefer to have people go to support and buy and all of that fun stuff. So, support the cause, folks. You really need to do that. Let's talk about the business of being an author. Now that you've got the book published, you know, what do you do to get the word out? Do you do book signings? Are you on a big world tour? What's happening in your life, Mark, to make sure everybody knows about Chasing the Northern Lights?
The best thing to do is just try and get, I've tried to sign up for or interviewed it like this. You know, just mention it as you go out. Facebook and Twitter are unbelievable sources of stage, if you will. You know, you try and get yourself involved in local groups. I've sent out emails to other radio stations like that. As an independent artist, it's really hard because you got to do all that yourself. You know, if you get picked up by a major house, obviously they have people that are doing all that for you. But I have seen people who are independent artists have gotten themselves involved with local groups who have enjoyed many, many successes because of the fact that they were able to do that. Whether they're connecting with other people, other writers, that type of thing gives them an opportunity to see what they are. So I'm going to try and do that. But I think a lot of it, too, is this type of interaction. You know, you have to be able to, I can't have people, you know, want or appreciate the book until they want or appreciate who I am as a person. You know, if I'm putting out the right words, if I'm putting out a truthfulness now, they're going to not have any concerns about me putting out truthfulness in a book, whether it's a fiction book or nonfiction or whatever it is. If you write the word, you stand behind the word, that's your truth. And so to get that word out, really, right now at this point, it's just a matter of, you know, letting people know or telling your coffee person that you go to see. You know, if you stop and get coffee in the morning on your way to work, you let them know, you let your barber know, you know, you let your friends, cousins know, everybody at this point. And then, you know, just looking for events either online or in the paper or something like that.
where you might be able to fit in.
Yeah,
you know, if there's a if there's a craft show, or if there's something coming up, or if there's a book show or something coming up, you get a hold of these people, and for now, that's how you'd have to do it.
You know, it's totally grassroots, but it's a lot of work. So that means you take the hard work there is of actually writing such a engaging read like Chasing the Northern Lights, available on Amazon, and then after you set your pen and paper down or your computer keyboard down, it's like, okay, now I need to go move some merch. I mean, it's a completely different mindset from being creative and, holed up at 3 o'clock in the morning and writing, compelling character stories.
That's true.
Do you, with a, background in the hospitality industry, does that help you, do you think, go out and
huge.
Be?
Yeah, it helps huge because you develop your skills as a speaker, you develop your skills as being able to interact with people a little bit more. It doesn't make you so, that's actually a great question. That doesn't make you so scared or nervous to approach people with something that you have. If you're standing in line with somebody at the grocery store and you want to tell people about it, or if you see that they're having a book, you have to be blatantly, promoting yourself. You have to be obnoxious about it if you're an independent artist. At least in my experience, you have to be that way.
Okay, great. I love it. And Mark, last question for you. By the way, I'm going to end the show today with my Christmas song. Guess what? It's Christmas time because it's even cold here in Huntington Beach. But I'm in gym shorts and a tank top, so that probably is not a good – and the door is open with the sunshine coming in. But everywhere else, we're starting to get some snow, not where you're at, Mark. But where would you like people to stay connected to you and with you?
Absolutely through Facebook. I do have a Twitter account, too. I believe it's ReynoldsMJ_04116. And then also, basically, on my Facebook page, you can find me. The banner page has a big Chasing the Northern Light thing across it. So you'll know that's me. That's the book I'm working on now or promoting now, and then also on my author page too. I share, everything that's going on with me as a writer. I try and share everything that's going on with other friends as a writer. Robin Raven, you mentioned earlier.
Robin's awesome. Kudos to Robin.
Yeah, she's great. She's great. So I'll try and send, try and share as much of their work as possible, because not only are we trying to promote our work, we're trying to promote their work as well. It's a big community. It's a big understanding, a big unspoken understanding that you want to try and do that for people as much as possible. Not just your work, but theirs. If you see brilliance, if you see genius, something that you want to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to at least look at, get it out there to them. And so obviously Facebook is a great stage or platform for that.
Everybody, it's been Mr. Mark Reynolds. His book is Chasing the Northern Lights, available on Amazon today. Go buy your 10 copies. We will see you next time on Rated G Radio. But in the meantime, here's a little pre-Christmas cheer. Have a great day, everybody. Well, you might not think it's Christmas with the sunshine in the trees. You might not even think of Santa Claus with his dogs down by the beach. Oh, their tails they are a-wagging, wagging here to there. And the joyous sounds of barking without care. Without your winter clothes, you might want a tiny puppy or one with a big brown nose. Either way, you'll feel so happy with love from Santa's sleigh and playing with your puppy Christmas Day. Bathe and clip with bells and bows. Time for you.
listening to Rated G Radio.